Alrighty, how we doing now? Number three of our radio program. That's right, it is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. This portion of the show is sponsored by the United States Postal Service, introducing USPS Ground Advantage, reliable and affordable 2 to 5 day package shipping. The United States Postal Service. College football was back this past weekend. Week one gets kicked off. Really, tomorrow night, you got some good games on the docket. Sunday, can't wait for Florida State, LSU. I'm going to be at a wedding, so I'm going to have to navigate watching the game and also enjoying the wedding as well. So let's chat a little college ball right now with Mike Sanford Jr., who played at Boise State as a quarterback, was also a Notre Dame offensive coordinator, a head coach at Western Kentucky, and last year was the interim head coach at Colorado. And Coach Mike Sanford Jr. is kind enough to join us right now. Coach, appreciate the time. How are you?
I'm doing awesome, Zach. I'm just like you, man. I got my brisket ready to go. Ready for this football palooza for the next 5 days. It's that time of year, man. If you're anything like me, I can barely sleep. I'm so excited to watch these games.
I'm already in love here with this conversation. I don't even need your football analysis anymore. Brisket? That's a power move right there, Coach.
Tell you what, man. Farmers markets out here in Ranchland out here in Colorado, man. There's some pretty impressive briskets out there for sale. So I got a nice 9.5-pounder waiting to get smoked, and my family's ready for it. I just told them it's got to be football season before we fire that thing in the big green egg. So looking forward to talking football with you, man. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, so on Saturday, I got to hear more about the brisket. You have the brisket. What else do you have with the brisket?
I mean, I'm in charge of the meat. You know, I'll take care of the protein, and my wife is an unbelievable cook with everything else. So I trust that she'll get her job done and do it very well. But I'm going to make sure that brisket comes off perfect with the perfect amount of moisture content, a low and slow, no more than 2.25. So yeah, it's gonna be a heck of a weekend.
It sounds great. Well, I know you're going to be watching Boise State, Washington, your alma mater, going up against Washington, and what a quarterback matchup we have with Talen Green of Boise State going up against Michael Penix at Washington, who last year made a big push to try to be a Heisman Trophy finalist.
Yeah, Michael Penix Jr., start with him. I had a chance to coach up in Seattle against him. You know, I was in the Big Ten at Minnesota as the offensive coordinator as well, and so I saw him while he was at Indiana, and, you know, he really jumped off, you know, the screen to all of us back in the COVID year of 2020. That, you know, that pylon stretching touchdown to beat Penn State kind of was his coming of age moment. And what I'm so impressed with him is, you know, he was really athletic, kind of bit of a runner early in his career, had an ACL, has had a shoulder. And last season, seeing him firsthand, I mean, the amount of throws that he makes, the full catalog. I mean, we're talking back shoulder throws, perfect touch balls, driven balls. I mean, the field cover two hole shot he threw against Oregon last season might have been the best ball placement I saw in college football last year. So I'm excited to watch how my Boise State Bronco defense defends him and a slew of weapons, starting with Rome Odunze. So it's going to be a battle up there in Seattle, and I'm looking forward to seeing the Broncos go up there and do what we've always done, man, try to knock off a giant.
So it got me thinking with what you were saying about Michael Penix Jr., and I love the way that you laid it out, because when he was at Indiana, there was ups and downs, right? Same thing with Bo Nix when he was at Auburn. Both those guys go to new schools. Penix Jr., as you just said it, had a monster season last year. So did Bo Nix as well. Is there at all concern about either of those two players in not only being able to replicate what they did a year ago, but to even get better off of it?
I think Michael Penix Jr. will get even better. Just one more year in a settled system. Kalen DeBoer was with him and recruited him at Indiana, so there was familiarity a year ago. But, you know, there was a 3-year gap between when he played under Kalen DeBoer and Ryan Grubbs at Indiana, and now obviously he's doing you know, kind of back to what he did and had success with early in his Indiana career. I think he's going to take that next step, and not only that in his system, but also just to have that many returning weapons at the receiver position at Washington, Polk, McMillan, the running back position's very good. Offensive line's been a strength of theirs. You know, I think that offense is going to be very dynamic. And craziest thing about it is that Washington's maybe the strength of their entire football roster isn't even their offensive skill. It might be their defensive front seven. You look at it, it's fifth-year senior, six-year senior, you know, across the board. And, you know, I think that they are a team that will be around Certainly in the CFP conversation, we'll get into November.
So the school that you were at the last few years, Colorado, or last year, I should say, with Colorado, you ended up becoming the interim head coach as Coach Mike Sanford Jr. is here with us. It's totally different now. You bring in Deion Sanders. A lot comes with that. And, you have Shador Sanders. You have Travis Hunter Jr. as well. Big matchup early on against TCU. How about the direction of the Colorado program as they get ready to embark year one of Coach Prime?
Well, first off, I have to go study the roster because I don't really know anybody. There's only about 7 or 8 scholarship players that remain from the team a year ago. So clearly this team has been handpicked by Deion Sanders and his staff. Obviously with Deion Sanders coming in, his notoriety as a baseball player, as a obviously an all-pro football player, Hall of Famer in football, there's always going to be eyeballs on the bus. It's certainly going to be a game that every single one of us is going to tune into on Saturday morning. I believe it's 12:30 Eastern time when they go to TCU. Just a thing to look out for. This has never been done in college football. Now you're looking at, I think it's 86 new players total on the roster. And just what that looks like in week one. Obviously, are they in sync? Everybody's playing on the same page. Where I think you're going to see some of the issues might be in the line play. And not because they don't have good players, but because of just playing together and quote unquote gelling in the line play. But, I predict that CU will go up early in that game. I think that they have skill players on the perimeter. And then it's just going to be about weathering the storm. TCU's got a lot of skill as well.
Yeah, I know that the big talking point is all about Colorado, but I'm also curious about TCU because Sonny Dykes has been around the block for a long time, right? Had another new head coaching job last year. They get to the national championship game. Yeah, they lost Quinnen Johnson. They lost Max Duggan. But I also think things that people forget here with how much we talked about Duggan last year, Chandler Morris was the starter last year at the beginning of the season, then got hurt. So I'm curious to see what Chandler Morris is going to be able to do this season.
Yeah, in fact, last year when I was the offensive coordinator at CU, we opened up hosting TCU. And really for 2.5 quarters, it was a really good football game. Nobody really knew what TCU was with a brand new coaching staff. Certainly, we didn't know that there were going to be a CFP, play in a national championship game. But Chandler Morris was the starting quarterback and was running around making plays, looked really good, and got hurt in that game in Boulder, Colorado. So this is going to be a game where he gets back under the saddle. I think he is there is a reason that he was the starter going into last season. He's had one of those careers where he's had to overcome a whole lot of adversity. So I'm excited to watch Chandler Morris. I think he is going to present some problems. I think from a His mobility is definitely something that's going to pose problems for CU just because he gets outside of the pocket. He gets rid of the ball effectively and son of a coach. So I think it's going to be a fun matchup to watch.
Coach Mike Sanford Jr. here with us. When we get to UNC South Carolina, that's another game with the big quarterback matchup. You have Spencer Rattler going up against Drake May, who could be the second overall pick in this draft. Who do you give the edge to in that contest?
I just love what Shane Beamer's been doing at South Carolina. A former defensive coordinator of mine at Western Kentucky, Clayton White's done a fantastic job on the defense side of the ball. But, as that season wore on, Spencer Rattler's confidence just grew exponentially. I think he's going to play a really good football game. I think it's going to be a pro-South Carolina crowd, even though it's in a neutral site crowd. They travel extremely well, the Gamecocks do. And I think that they're going to edge out North Carolina. It's going to be a close game. It might be the game that we're all talking about on Sunday and Monday. I think that Drake May is a player. I personally haven't necessarily bought the hype yet, but I haven't had much time to watch him, to be quite honest. And this fall, I'm gonna have my eyes on Drake May and just see what his skill set is as we go into this, this next draft class. Because I've seen Caleb Williams firsthand, and he is a dude. And I've seen Michael Penix firsthand. He's a dude. And then you even go down to different guys in the conference in Pac-12. There's quarterbacks all over the place. So I think the standard's been set pretty high with the Pac-12 in its last year with the quarterback play.
Yeah, there's so many names inside the Pac-12, and the Pac-12 shaping up to be a great conference this year. The question just is, will they beat up on one another too much, or they're on the outside looking in the college football playoff? But I'm also curious what DJ Uiagalelei does this year, because we talked about, right, Bo Nix and Michael Penix Jr. bouncing back from adversity. I wonder if DJ could do that this year.
I think DJ's in a perfect situation up in Corvallis. Playing up there last season, their line play, their ground-and-town run attack, he doesn't necessarily have to be in such a quarterback-driven run game like Clemson has been traditionally over the last decade. And that's, I don't think, something he was as comfortable with. He certainly is able to do it, but he's going to be able to run more of a pro-style attack. And I think with his height, his length, his ability to make throws down the field, I think it's going to be a great situation for him. And, you know, even if he, you know, doesn't throw the ball 30 times to 50 times a game, I think he's going to love having such a good ground game to set up the nakeds and the bootlegs and the play actions. And I think DJ has a really good year, but I think they're going to be a really good football team, a thorough team. And if I'm a conference out there, I'm trying to get the Oregon State Beavers because of what they built up there, both in the football program, the facilities. It's a shame that right now they're almost homeless right now relative to a conference.
Let me get to a school that you were the offensive coordinator at, of course, the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. I know they were going up against Navy, but they still won the game 42-3 and played a pretty flawless game. It was good to see Sam Hartman get off to the right start. We all know the quarterback he could be. Ultimately, this Notre Dame season is going to come down to those three games, Ohio State, USC, and Clemson. But how dangerous of a team do you think Notre Dame is this year?
Notre Dame's going to be, I think, they're going to be the class of college football with regards to line play, and particularly on the offensive line. I saw that was the storyline for me coming out of week zero, is just how incredibly dominant Notre Dame's offensive line was. And, you know, you could say it's against the Naval Academy. What I would say to that is, you know, a lot of teams are going to open up with FCS and even non-scholarship FCS programs in their opening week. This is Navy. This is a team that's won double-digit games in the last, you know, 10 years multiple times. That offensive line was truly recreating the line of scrimmage to the point where if you freeze the ball, when the ball was put into the running back's belly from the shotgun, I mean, that line had moved 2 to 4 yards almost on a consistent basis. And I just see that they're coached well. They play extremely hard. I think Joe Rudolph, former offensive line coach from Wisconsin, now at Notre Dame, he's made a tremendous impact. I was fortunate enough to be there in 2015. And our offensive line consisted of Mike McGlinchey, Quentin Nelson, Ronnie Stanley, Nick Martin. And I think that this offensive line at Notre Dame rivals that group. And I think that's going to be the name of the game for them, is riding their physicality, their big backs. And the question is going to be, down the stretch for them, do they have the dynamic playmakers out on the perimeter? I see length. I see size. But do you see that make you miss, like I saw with Zachariah Branch at SC? I haven't seen that yet from Notre Dame.
Mike Sanford Jr. here with us. What does LSU Florida State come down to? Last year, we know it came down to the kicker at the end, but the way that we talk about this game is much differently than last year, because both these programs at the end of the season were playing some great football.
Yeah, I really like Jaden Daniels. I liked him when he was at Arizona State, and just tracking his growth, even seeing draft reports recently that say he's going to be a receiver in the NFL. I think he's a quarterback. And I think people are making the same mistake about Jaden Daniels and how they're projecting him, just like they did with DTR. And we've seen what DTR did in this preseason for the Browns. I think he's that similar type of player. He just has a little bit more length than DTR, can be in the pocket, out of the pocket. Last year, almost having 1,000 yards rushing. I think that LSU is going to win this football game. I personally like Florida State. I think that both programs are in a completely different space than they were going into game one last year. But I personally see that LSU has too much firepower, and I think they're gonna win this football game.
How about Texas? The Big 12 this year, I think you have a lot of good teams. I don't know if you have any great teams, but are you a believer in Quinn Ewers, Sark, and this Texas program?
Well, I think Quinn Ewers is clearly won the starting battle at the quarterback position, and two tremendous backup options, which is a blessing, and it's also a curse, and Malik Murphy and Arch Manning. I think that's going to be a storyline that it's going to be looming over both Steve Sarkisian's head, over his shoulder this whole season, and certainly Quinn Ewers. I mean, the eyes of Texas, as they used to say, they're going to be watching that, you know, very closely. Quinn's going to have to play really good football to silence the doubters. I think that's added pressure to a program that needs to deliver this year. I think they've done a good job in recruiting. And I think this has to be a good year for Quinn. And I think that we saw the progress in the tail end of last season. And obviously it ended up in a loss to University of Washington in the bowl game. But there were a lot of really positive things to take out of Quinn Ewers' game from the end of that season.
Last thing I'll ask you, I always find it funny with college coaches about the depth chart games. Like, Nick Saban's not even going to tell us who his quarterback is. Ohio State says, yeah, it's Kyle McCord, but also Devin Brown's going to play as well. What do you kind of make of also Ohio State and then Alabama this year with the uncertainty of their quarterbacks?
I mean, we as coaches, we're all anxious. We all have extreme levels of paranoia. It's fun for me to be on the outside looking in now and just almost snicker at some of the tactics that we all employ as coaches. But there are some schematic advantages. I mean, if you have a quarterback, you know, battle that's going on right up until the very first game of the season, there might be two completely different skill sets that a defense has to prepare for. And a defense coordinator might have to double their call sheet with regards to containing an athletic quarterback that presents a threat in the quarterback run game or the option game on the perimeter, or a traditional dropback player where you just have to play your gaps and play them sound. And, you know, so I can see the benefit of doing so. But at the end of the day, once you've played your opener, you pretty much show your cards, and then obviously get into the season, and then it becomes the same game with injury reports, which we're already seeing with Cam Rising in Utah, and there's certainly a lot of games and tactics being played there as the Gators come to Rice-Eccles Stadium in Salt Lake.
Well, Coach, enjoy the brisket. You know, my sister lives in Centennial now, so next time I'm in Colorado, I may have to go try some. But really do appreciate the time today. Great insight. And we'll definitely have you on again throughout the season.
Hey, I really appreciate it, Zach. Great being on. And anytime you want brisket, man, we'll fire it up. I've had a couple bad times firing them up, and I'm ready for some really, really good briskets.
Absolutely love it. Coach Mike Sanford Jr. right there on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Wow. Tremendous appearance by Coach. Really did enjoy his energy, perspective, and whenever you start off the conversation talking about brisket and food, you know that you're already won over my heart in terms of having a good chance to come back on the show. All right, you can think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts. When we come on back, the five non-quarterbacks to watch in college football this season. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. So all we talk about in college football is coach, quarterback, coach, quarterback, coach, quarterback, 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 coach. Just going into non-quarterbacks this year. So any player that is not a quarterback, who are the five non-quarterbacks that we have to watch in college football this year? And I put together a list here. In at number five, I'm going to go with Jared Verse of the Florida State Seminoles. Now, you remember when we had Mike Norvell on, he was talking about him. And this was a guy that I think even they were surprised that he came back. And his story is tremendous, where he was at Albany and then gets to Florida State and now is back for another year. Last season had 9 sacks, 17 tackles for loss. I believe he's going to have a monster season. He could have been a top 25. It would have been first-round pick this year, and he came back to Florida State. He's definitely a player to watch. Next up is projected to be the best defensive player in the SEC. So puts him in the conversation for best defensive player in college football. And I'm looking at a man that's at LSU.
Go Tigers.
Even though Ed Orgeron is no longer there, Harold Perkins Jr. He's going to have a monster season this year. Three. Now we go back to the offensive side of the ball after two defensive players. Brock Bowers at Georgia. We know that he's going to be the first tight end selected in the draft. Two. Marvin Harrison Jr. at Ohio State. He could be the second overall pick in the draft this year. Assuming the first pick in the draft needs a quarterback, you know that's going to be Caleb Williams. It then could be Drake May as a second player taken, but if it's a team that does not need a quarterback at two, Marvin Harrison Jr. is definitely going to be a name that's going to be right at the top of that list. And then number one, it was the guy that I thought was going to win the Heisman Trophy last year, and then unfortunately got hurt. It's Blake Corum for the Michigan Wolverines. Those are my five non-quarterbacks to watch this year in college football who I think could be five of the better players in college football if you take all the quarterbacks out of it. Hickster, I know you love this stuff. And there's nothing more that Hickey loves in sports than college football and just dissecting everything. If you could have seen Hickey right there, he was slamming the board, which you may want to be careful there. That's a very expensive piece of equipment, and I don't want to deal right before a holiday weekend, us getting a call from management and them thinking I'm like responsible for you, and they go, oh, Hickey broke the board. But you are very excited for this weekend as you are going up to Happy Valley, where you'll get to see your Penn State Nittany Lions with there a lot of high expectations for the Nittany Lions going up against West Virginia. And your football team, I'm sure there's a player or two that is not a quarterback, because everyone's talking about Drew Allard, that stands out to you. So give me a few players that are on your list, non-quarterbacks to watch, if we take Blake Corum, Marvin Harrison Jr., Brock Bowers, Harold Perkins, and Verse off the board.
Let's start with, I think, the best player in college football in 2024. Not 2023, but on the way to being that.
Can you just stop? I know it's going to be Penn State in the line.
Oh, it is. How'd you know?
Can you just do me a favor? Can we get through this season first before we start to make bold claims about 2024?
I actually tweeted that last year, so I was two years ahead of the boat. And you better
no
bet
big deal,
you
no big
you
deal,
what.
No big deal.
I'll be circling back to that tweet when that is the case next year.
Great.
That'll be digging that bad boy out for all the hate I get for being wrong. When I am right this time next year, or not even this time, 2 months from now, in 2024, so...
Well, hopefully your fingers are in a good spot.
14 months from now, I will be getting that tweet back.
Because...
Mark yourself warned.
Well, before you give us the player, and I think I know who you're going here with, but a few weeks ago, you injured your hand. You, fractured your finger, I think it was. You had a torn ligament, something like that, because you slammed your hand on the cement of a pool. Today, I noticed you have a bandage on your finger as well. What the heck did you do to your finger now?
A little cut.
How'd you cut your finger? You chopping up some hot takes?
No Slice. Chopping up hot takes. I don't really know. I think it was in the shower. I think I cut it on my girlfriend's razor, but I'm not 100% sure. I started walking to work. I noticed it hurting. I looked down. I'm like, oh, I got a cut. And I just figured I'll put a little Bend-It over it, so that way it's not like, you know, it's my pointer finger. A lot of button pressing here. Mm-hmm. A lot of typing. A lot of clicking. So a little extra pad. That's all. Nothing crazy.
You're not a big firework guy, right?
Not at all.
Okay.
Oh, no.
Don't be playing with any fireworks this weekend, because with the amount of finger injuries that you've had, the next thing I'll know, you'll be like Jason Pierre-Paul. You'll be missing a few fingers and blowing your fingers off because of the fireworks. So be careful, because you've had a lot of finger injuries recently. But anyway.
No, come on.
You've had a lot of finger injuries. That's a fact. You've had bandages on your hand now multiple weeks here. I'm concerned about
you. But I don't complain, do I? No, I do not. No, I just
all right,
I just
give me the
suck
players
it up
here,
and I
jackass.
Move on. All right, Nicholas Singleton, know the name, Penn State running back. He is legit. No homer pick there. Big freshman year, over 1,000 yards. Big year number two coming as well with what is supposed to be the best offensive line for Penn State they've had in the James Franklin era. Get to know the name. He's a lot of fun to watch. That's a guy, absolutely, that's going to be a player, non-quarterback, we will all be watching.
So I'm kind of surprised by that. I knew that was the player that you were going to go because you're hyping up exciting, but maybe the best player on your roster is the offensive lineman that's projected to be a top five pick.
Olu Fashanu. I respect the audience.
Either him or Joe Alt.
I respect the audience.
Yes, you should give him that information.
I will not bore them
by
saying, go watch a left tackle. That's a homer pick.
Are you saying large guys that push people in the trenches are boring?
Depends. I actually have two large guys on this list I'm going to bring up in a little bit. So I'm not biased. But I will say, in terms of excitement to watch, I'm not going to tell you go watch a Penn State game. Don't watch a quarterback. Oh, I'm sorry. We're not talking about quarterbacks right now. Don't watch a running back. Don't watch a receiver. Don't watch the edge rusher that could be tearing up, you know, the game. Let's go watch the left tackle.
You don't respect fat people.
No,
you don't,
no, that's
you don't
not,
respect
that's
people that win football games.
I respect the audience enough to where I'm not going to divert their attention to a position that they don't actually want to focus on.
All right, that's GQ, all. Hickey. That's what you are.
But you know, fine. You think I'm being biased here? I'm going to bring up two larger men that are people are going to have a joy to watch.
Are they offensive linemen?
No, they're not.
Oh,
actually, one
no!
is. One is. One is. One is. We'll start right there.
Who's the offensive lineman here?
Breon Ramsey Brooks. 455-pound TCU freshman. You talk about a mountain of a man. That's a guy I'm going to have be excited to watch. On the flip side, tomorrow, here's a little preview for you. Thursday night, Utah, Florida. Forget about watching the game to see if Utah can win without their quarterback, Cam Rising. Watch to see Florida's interior line, number 21, which I love. Big men in small numbers. 21, Desmond Watson is 439 pounds. Watch that big boy move. That's a guy you should watch. That's a guy that's going to be exciting on the field.
Who was the first player you said? What school?
TCU.
TCU, okay. Gotcha. I also saw a large guy from UCF recently. I got to go look it up, but I saw that making the rounds on social media. So I thought that was the player that you were talking about. And I'd be like, oh, UCF, all they do is like to recruit like large freaks. When you go back to Taco Fall with their basketball team, is one of the tallest people I've ever seen.
Works. It works. They are producing NBA talent and now producing NFL talent as well. But there you go. See, I am not biased. But again, I love Olu. I hope he blocks great. But in terms of like got people to watch outside of quarterback, I'm going to try to be fair to the audience here and give them people that are actually excited to watch, not offensive line play.
Okay. Continue.
Speaking of exciting to watch, we got a little sneak peek last week. Zachariah Branch, USC kind of do-it-all gadget guy, was a joy. Two touchdowns already, including an amazing kick return as well for a touchdown. That looks like it'd be Caleb Williams' kind of brand-new toy as Jordan Addison goes to the NFL from last year's team. You can hear comps to kind of like a DeSean Jackson kind of type of player, Tavon Austin, like those smaller, speedy, exciting players. That's one to watch for. We got a little bit last week with USC. Zachariah Branch, take a watch. You already said one Ohio State receiver. Look, to give him credit, they got two great receivers. I'll mention another one, Emeka Buka.
Yeah.
Again, the best 1-2 punch receiver-wise in college football. And with all the attention, right, Marvin Harrison Jr. should and will get this year, that's going to mean a lot of single coverage instances and a lot of should be open looks for the other great Ohio State receiver. And now here's one. I guess I'll double down on USC because that is my national champ. So I'll give him some credit.
Do you have any defensive players for USC? Mason
Cobb. Oklahoma State transfer. Big-time linebacker. One of the guys that's going to change the defense for the best. Tackling machine at Oklahoma State with the Cowboys. Watch him. That's a guy that'll be all over the field, terrorizing defenses. Look, did he take off against San Jose State? Maybe. You got to, you know, ease your way into it. No problem. Big game start in about a month and a half, 6 weeks from now. That's when we'll be talking about his name a ton when it comes to stopping Washington, Utah, Oregon, Notre Dame. Watch him.
You know who's not high on that USC defense besides like everyone in America?
Who's that?
CBS Sports Radio columnist.
Columnist?
Jack Stern.
Oh, I feel good then. Good.
The headline on our website, which basically never gets used anymore outside of uploading Jack Stern articles. I don't even know why we still have this website. But the headline is Stern, the Grinch who could steal USC's national title hopes, talking about Alex Grinch. Look at Jack Stern. Gave about a minute and a half answer about something he wasn't even asked about when he was doing a TV hit. But now coming up with the creative headline on the website. So, I guess I'll give him credit there.
A little wordy. Now, maybe the Grinch who could steal USC's Christmas. But hey, I'm no wordsmith, so I won't criticize.
You're making me agree with Jack Stern. That's a problem. Anyone else you got on this list? Because I got a few names here.
Fire away.
Travis Hunter Jr.
True.
He does something that not a lot of people do, and he could also do it at an elite level. And I know that it's going to be okay. What's going to be the difference from Jackson State to Colorado, but remember how highly recruited he was. So him being a great player in the secondary and also wide receiver, really intriguing to watch. A guy that joined us last year, actually, where we talk about the Clemson football team and all about Cade Klubnik, but how about Jeremiah Trotter Jr.? That's also someone that I'm really curious to see. And then finally, maybe one of the better names in college football. I would say, well, this guy's a quarterback. I would say the best name in college football is Josh Booty's nephew, I want to say, General Booty, who I once called Major Booty. I'm in an interview, and I said, well, he's probably getting some Major Booty on campus for the General.
And you see his new NIL deal.
Yeah, like boxer briefs, right?
Underline.
Shake that
line.
Booty.
There you go.
I'm actually trying to get Booty's kid to, Booty has a son that looks like a good receiver. I'm trying to get the Temple Owls to go recruit him. Go get EJ Warner some help. But here may be one of the better names of college football, plays for Alabama. Kool-Aid McKinstry. That's also supposed to be one of the better non-quarterbacks in college football. PFF actually has him ranked as the top corner in the country. You want to know who they have as the second-ranked corner in the country, Hickey?
Kalen King.
Yeah, of course you would know that because it's Penn State.
Because he's really good.
Yeah.
He's really good.
I'm just disappointed in you.
What are you disappointed in me for?
Because I thought you were a football savant and you appreciated the people that really win football games, and that's the big boys up front and the offensive line and you missed just two tremendous offensive linemen this year.
You gave eight names and zero offensive linemen. You were just you were even more guilty.
What do you mean?
Three swings.
No. But then
you did out of the eight players you listed, none were offensive linemen.
Not true at all. I brought up Joe Alt when we were talking about the conversation.
You mentioned him in passing, and you mentioned old fashioned. You have it into him. You mentioned their names.
What do you want to be, Brian Baldinger here?
I'm just saying.
You're Mr. College Football here.
For not giving offensive line names and yet eight chances.
You love when I say you're Mr. College Football. So when I say that, even though your takes are crazy, out of all the producers and talk show hosts in the Monday through Friday lineup here at CBS Sports Radio, I think you're the most knowledgeable. Now, you're still stupid at times, but I think you're the most knowledgeable person for college football. No one watches more college football than you. So I hold you to a higher standard here. And when you don't give me some great offensive linemen, I'm going to be annoyed, especially when we just had a coach join us talk about bleeping brisket. It would have flowed perfectly. We go from brisket to the big boys up front with a bunch of beef.
What was the segment called?
Most entertaining non-quarterbacks.
There's
offensive linemen can be entertaining. They could be exciting. Sexy. Big sexy. That's entertaining. That's
big
exciting.
Fellas. Not in this category.
Because that's because you just hate large people. You hate fat people. It's because you're a little skinny mini. Your GQ model.
I'm just fitting into the segment that you create. I'm just trying to fit in there.
I'm being a voice for the voiceless right now. I'm a large man. I played offensive line back at Comac High School. JV, nine offensive linemen of the year. All righty? You better start showing some respect and appreciation for the big boys up front. And if you don't, I'll chop off one of those fingers that you have because you're already close to doing one of those.
Just don't touch Olu, okay?
Oh,
you're protecting
like
Drew Aller's blind side.
Now you like him.
He's
all
a
of
great
sudden.
Player. He's not exciting.
Yeah.
Big difference.
I want him on this year. Hey, one of your biggest fans of Penn State can't stand your guts because you're a large guy. How does that make you feel?
Offensive linemen and referees. When are they at their best? When you don't know their names. When you're not bringing them up.
Okay. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Remember, folks, if you're a big fella like me, if you're a husky fella, Hot Take Hickey doesn't like you. So you shouldn't like Hot Take Hickey.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
Oh, Hickey, you're taking me back. Not only do I love the rejoin with Ed Orgeron, who may be my favorite college coach ever, but now you're playing We Found Love. I remember driving home from working a shift, flipping burgers at Five Guys. And this was right after the Patriots. Now, I was not watching the game at Five Guys. I'm talking about like it was like the next day where I had to go to work. And I remember the Patriots in the AFC Championship game up against the Ravens. That was the Billy Cundiff miss kick, which was awesome. And I like ran right out of my living room, right out the front door, and was like rolling in the grass going delirious. And this song came on the radio. And then I had the Scott Zolak just like laughing at the Cundiff miss kick, because I think he was a part of that radio broadcast team as like a silent reporter or something, or his third man in the booth. Because I still think at that time it was Gil and Gino doing the games. I think it was pre-Bob Sosi. And this song for about 2 weeks, because I heard it then. I was playing with the call. We Found Love was all I listened to. Then I go to the game, Patriots and the Giants a second time. Patriots lose the Super Bowl, and then I don't think I listened to that song willingly ever again. Now, I guess that wasn't willingly because you played it, but I have not wanted to listen to that song in a long time. But I was a big fan of that song for a long time.
I was going to say, that actually brings you joy more than, because I get it in the moment you played more after the game, so it's after the win, and then you know 2 weeks later the loss happens.
So the way that I look at this was that song. You know when you maybe like go to Super Bowl for the first time, or the first time you have it in a long time, and you get like an AFC or an NFC championship shirt? Like if the Colts got to the Super Bowl this year, which we know would never happen, you would get an AFC championship shirt, potentially. Like it's out of the realm of possibilities. But if they go on to lose the Super Bowl, it's like you look back at that shirt and you have a bad kind of taste in your mouth because of the way the season ended. That's my view of that song, We Found Love, where I loved it for a while and for a little bit, but then I always then remember what happened a few weeks later. So that's where I'm kind of at on that one.
Tough. Yeah. One of my friends,
they ended up winning six Super Bowls, so I was okay.
World Series to the Royals, blasted Royals by Lord in our apartment for a long time. So that song brings me nightmares.
So I once roomed with a big Seattle Seahawks fan at a sleepaway camp. And we had, it wasn't like bunk beds. Like I had a king size bed, and then there was a loft, and he had the upper part of the loft. And every morning I would play the Malcolm Butler interception as well, which he was not a big fan of. And then we ended up going to the Patriots Seahawks game years later, where the Patriots ended up losing right at the goal line too. So stuff like that happens where you have fun with it in sports. But yeah, I haven't heard that song We Found Love in a while, and it just reminds me of that game, of the AFC Championship game, and then never wanting to hear that song after what happened with the Super Bowl. Did I ever tell you about that Super Bowl 46 experience for me? Where I was at the game with my uncle and my cousin, and we were driving back from Indianapolis to Buffalo because my cousin was attending Buffalo at the time. And then my uncle and I, we drove to Buffalo and then flew back to New York. I think it was JFK or LaGuardia. That was a terrible car ride to go from Indianapolis to Buffalo because all it was music playing. And then my uncle would stop, or my cousin would slam the music and he would bitch about the game. Music play. Then I would bitch about the game. Music play. And then my uncle, who actually went through bad days with the Patriots, his lifelong fan, would basically lecture us and tell us how we're a bunch of spoiled children. So that was a miserable, and I mean a miserable car ride back. Anyway, this is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Driving under the influence of marijuana is illegal, and law enforcement officers can tell if you're driving high. If you feel different, you drive different. Drive high, get a DUI paid for by NHTSA. Good news today about maybe the most overblown story of all time. Remember when Ja'Marr Chase was advocating for Joe Burrow to not play week one? And you have a week one matchup against the Cleveland Browns for the Cincinnati Bengals. That's Sunday, September 10th. And Joe Burrow suffered a minor calf injury. And everyone's like freaking out. Oh, he may not be ready for the start of the season. And I know Zach Taylor's been a little bit confusing or secretive and ambiguous about when he was going to come back. Today, Joe Burrow returned to the practice field. So, Hickey, I think we could cross that list off the potential topics for next week. Should Joe Burrow even play week one? Because he absolutely is going to play, and he should play, in my opinion. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, if he's healthy, that's all that matters. If his calf's good to go, week one, week three doesn't truly matter, which is for the Bengals, it kind of helps. I know you have two division games to start, and you want to get off to a hot start, but as long as he's healthy and ready to go, plays week one, great. If you need an extra week or two, not the end of the world.
Now, what do you think about the contract component of this? Because they have not reached the long-term extension with Joe Burrow yet.
I would get it done before week one without a doubt. There's no reason.
If you're the
not
Bengals,
to.
You would.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I 1,000% agree. But if I'm Joe Burrow, yeah, you'd rather get the deal done than not get the deal done. But I don't think it matters. Like Joe Burrow, he could tear his ACL this year. And I know he's already done that. That would be awful. No one wants to see that, clearly. He would still get paid a monster deal. Because if the Bengals don't want to do it, there will be a countless amount of teams that are in position to need a quarterback that would still do it for Joe Burrow. That dude is the second best quarterback in football.
Where no one really wanted to trade and pay Lamar Jackson, it would be quite the opposite. If, let's just say, Jackson's situation played out in Cincinnati, and now Joe Burrow's out there for the taking.
And that's also a great point. Like, Lamar Jackson ended up getting that contract the last 2 years. He hasn't been able to be on the field healthy. So I think a lot of people go, oh, it's a risk. And I know there's a bunch of agents, like former agents, saying, I wouldn't let my client step on the field. That's easy for you to say. If they don't get a deal done by the start of the season, this deal already should get done. You know Joe Burrow isn't going to listen to some agent that tells him not to go on the field. Because Joe Burrow's a winner. Joe Burrow's a great competitor. We saw what Joe Burrow was able to do at LSU, where the year before, no one was talking about Joe Burrow when he was at LSU. We're all talking about that guy, Nick Brossette, the running back. And then Joe Burrow maybe had one of the more unlikely roads to go win a Heisman Trophy and then also have an all-time great season and one of the greatest college football teams you ever see going undefeated and winning a national championship. So, you know, Burrow was so close a few years ago. The Bengals have a window here with guys like T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd, clearly his pal in Ja'Marr Chase. You have Hendricks on the defensive side of the ball. Lou Anarumo has done a good job with that defense as well. I don't think it matters contractually right now for Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow's playing this season. I know y'all go to play to eventually get money, but the only thing that matters to Joe Burrow for this upcoming season is the Super Bowl. He's healthy. He's going to be ready to go. And this Bengals team, man, they've been so close the last 2 years. They took that step quicker than anyone could have thought, and it's all because of the quarterback. and you look at Joe Burrow, that year coming off the injury, gets him the Super Bowl. If they could have just gave him another second of protection, he had a wide open man down the sideline that would have been a touchdown. And then last year, gets the AFC Championship game after defeating Patrick Mahomes three straight times, and they lose to Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. Bengals, they've been the biggest threat and the biggest pain in the ass for the Kansas City Chiefs, and you would expect that to continue this year in the NFL. All right, we'll take a break. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. We come on back. We update you on some of the biggest stories in the world of sports with some audio. We call that segment the News Brief. Also, Justin Pugh, NFL offensive lineman, played with the Giants and Cardinals. We'll stop by in about 45 minutes from now.